Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. I'm back after 2 weeks. As you can tell, I haven't been on the last couple of weeks because of my workload and a whole bunch of other stuff. Anyway, folks, my name is Stuart Thompson. I'm lucky and honored to have Pat here with me as my guest tonight. First of many women I'm going to have come in here and talking about their experiences. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Pleasure to be here, Stuart.
And tonight, and I'm going to get right back to you, tonight we're going to be talking about a lot of things. One of the things we're going to be talking about is about estrangement and reconciliation, which Pat's going to touch base on, but in a few minutes. I'm just going to get a few things out of the way, and then we're just going to dive right into it. First off, as I've stated, my name is Stuart Thompson. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse. I am not here to fix you. I'm not your doctor or anything of the sort. Neither is Pat. We're not here to try to tell you what you should do. So if I may put this way, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a PhD doctor, psychologist, or anything of the sort. All I'm offering, or we're offering tonight, is our own experiences in our healing journey and hoping that you will get something out of this to help yourselves, because that's about what we do here at the Gatehouse. It's about helping ourselves. And we're just passing down what we've learned for ourselves and hoping that you will get something out of this. So, folks, welcome tonight. And by the way, the Gatehouse is at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always like to say. What else do I need to say? I'm probably forgetting something, but that's all right. I'm going to come back to it. But right now, which is more important, is I have Pat as my guest tonight. And welcome, Pat.
Oh, thank you.
So I understand you. Yeah, thank you. If I can ask you about this, you just got back from a vacation, right?
I did. I had a beautiful vacation in Bali in Australia with Laura Davis.
Wow.
Yeah, and a group of beautiful women that were there. A very supportive group.
That's totally awesome. And now you're back to the so-called land of reality, right?
I am. Back to doing laundry and dishes.
Laundry and dishes. So, Pat, you've been around the Gatehouse for a while now.
Yes.
So, if I may ask you, would you mind talking about your story?
Okay.
To get us going here tonight?
Sure, yeah. I have been in recovery. I've been I think I'm the poster child for therapy. So I've been looking at my childhood sexual abuse and incest for, I guess, about 40 years. And my abuse started, I think, with my mother. That's a very primal connection that you have. And it takes away a lot of growth, a lot of things from you when that happens. Talking about it and being part of peer support groups, I found a lot of other people that have experienced that. I've also had sexual abuse by my father and a number of relatives. This is not really uncommon, so I've heard, because a lot of incest and sexual abuse is multi-generational. And that's where a lot of problems come in, because family is so crucial to our development and to being in the world, and also to our just our well-being in the world.
Mm.
So my abuse, I don't think, is that unusual. I've heard a lot of survivors talk about similar abuses. I think that when I was growing up, there was another type of abuse that happened that I'm just looking at now, and that was my mother and father were employed by a man that was part of a sex ring that was in the Horseshoe area of Niagara Horseshoe area.
Yeah.
And so that further just got me into another type of, I guess, realm of abuse that affected me in early childhood, and also my adulthood and mothering as a child. Mothering a child. Abuse really, I think when you're recovering, you have to start off with acceptance. Acceptance of what is, what has happened to you. And that can be very transformative. A lot of people get into looking at how they can reconcile, recover, forgive, and that. But the first step, I think, is just to say, okay, this happened. It sucks. It's people are cruel, and I have to take responsibility for dealing with this.
Mm. So if I may ask, so what brought you to the Gatehouse, or how did you find the Gatehouse? So what brought you to that, to being there?
Well, I guess I learned about it through my own abuse. So I just started to look at how I could start to heal. And I thought, I came here to be a facilitator. Mm. And I had an interview with Maria, and I was just all ready to jump in and be a facilitator. Mm. And through the interview, I became a bit of a mess. And she said, you know what, I think you should start off with phase one, from there. And so I did go through phase one and phase two, and started to do a lot of work before I became a facilitator here.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, you know, they come in and gung-ho and, think, gee, I've got this under my belt. And the Gatehouse is great at education.
Oh,
so
I
learned a lot, and you know, you don't know what you don't know.
No.
So it was really a lesson in starting off at the beginning and going from there.
Mm. Are you able to talk about some of your struggles that brought you here to begin with?
Some of them, yes. Like I said, I had a great deal of difficulty being a mother. I didn't have a very good role model, as I've said.
Mm.
And I found that I really couldn't take care of a child properly. I did keep my daughter, which a lot of people can't.
Mm.
But I had very severe PTSD, and I also had chronic fatigue syndrome.
Mm.
And so a lot of my struggles were both physical as well as
mental.
The PTSD.
Yeah,
and the depression and that. And I think a lot of, and I was a single mother without support, because my mother was not reliable. I did reconcile with her shortly, for a very short time, but basically I was on my own. And I think that happens to a lot of people, is that they don't have family. They are cut off, and it just makes it that much harder to parent and to break out of that kind of cycle.
Mm.
So,
I can really relate to that, being a single parent myself and doing the same thing. Not quite obviously the same circumstances, but very similar, and doing the same thing. I did not have that support either, so I could really relate to that.
Right. You think you're doing what that you should, you want, of course, be a better parent than that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times there's a lot of more or less, like I call traps,
mm-hmm.
that you get into.
Yeah.
Because, you go off and you think you know about boundaries, and then all of a sudden you're, caught up in, maybe a relationship that you want to be in,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and you really don't know how to sort that out.
Mm.
So I think that, now, and I think at the Gatehouse you have, partners.
Yeah, we have a partners program which we started co-facilitate as well. Yeah.
And I think, you know, a parenting is good, and a partners, and anything that can help just, fill in the gap of not having the knowledge of how to, even the developmental awareness of what is, what is required and that. And even communications. Communications is huge. And, when I started off parenting, I didn't really know how to communicate with my child. I didn't know how to have a relationship with my child. You know, these things are very fundamental. They're not talked about. And the thing is that it's crucial. It's absolutely crucial to be able to have a healthy relationship with your child. So those things need to be taught as well.
Yeah, I wish I had been taught those skills when I got into it. Like yourself, it's like, wet feet for sure.
Yeah.
And everything was a challenge.
Yes.
When maybe if I hadn't had those experiences happen to me, like yourself, maybe it wouldn't have been so hard.
Right. Exactly.
And it's, actually, I think it's twice as hard for someone who's been through our experience or similar experiences to kind of figure that out.
Yes.
Because you don't have that initial connection, if I'm correct in saying so.
Yes. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I can remember my first response a lot of times was rage.
Rage.
Rage. And anger. And the thing is that rage, I thought was like totally justified.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most of it was, at the same time, not cognitive, not aware of how much that hurt my child, or even other people.
Yeah.
I thought I just, I'm being angry. I'm standing up for myself. I'm not letting people take advantage of me.
Mm.
And, you need the perspective of, you can't, you have to be accountable too. And
same time, yeah.
At the same time.
Mm.
And so a lot of those things led to estrangement from my daughter. And that was extremely, extremely painful for me. One of the hardest things I've ever had to go through, because, when you're estranged from your family and you're trying to build a family of your own, you always think you're doing, and you do better than your parents. I didn't sexually abuse my daughter, but was a very angry person, and affected her very deeply. For that reason and a few others, she's decided to be estranged from me. We do connect every once in a while and that, but that particular grief led me to one of Laura Davis's retreats on grief and transformation. And there I learned about her book, I Thought We'd Never Speak Again. A wonderful book talking about all different kinds of hurt and cruelty and people that are trying to get over a lot of trauma. And one thing that stood out in the book was that estrangement actually, estrangement really, it hurts you, it hurts society. It hurts a lot of people. And with estrangement, you never really get over the person. It just leaves a bigger, deeper hole inside you. That's I'm talking about my own experience.
Mm.
My estrangement was very, I think, justified from my family in the end. But nonetheless, that doesn't make it any less hurtful. There was one point where we had to move, and we had to move quickly and not tell anybody where we went. And I had to break off all relationship with all of my family, aunts, uncles, all of my family. That was very necessary, but it left a very deep hole, not only in my life, but my daughter's life.
She didn't understand, probably, right?
She didn't understand, and I didn't feel that it was healthy to tell her. At the time, I didn't feel that it was healthy to tell her because I thought it would make her too afraid. Mm. The thing is that not talking made it even more afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, not knowing about why that happened and things. But nonetheless, estrangement is just as damaging, I think, as the abuse itself.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to people in different groups from phase one and phase two at the gatehouse, mm-hmm. They quite often say that's the case, that it's the hurt of not being connected, either with family, community, you know, a sense that you are not
very much alone,
very isolated.
Yeah, very isolated.
And with estrangement, the weird thing about that is too, is that even though I cut off and it was for safety reason and everything else, the person that you're estranged with, you think, okay, well, I'm done. You know, that's over and done with. But that's really the person that you think of
mm-hmm.
more than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Every birthday, anniversary or whatever, mm-hmm. you're still thinking of them. You're thinking of them at the time that you estranged. You're wondering whether they've changed. It's always with you. And I think that when you start to reconcile, you can kind of let that go and you can start in with healing and being present
mm-hmm.
with yourself.
It's hard to do.
It's hard to do. Very
hard. Really
hard
to do. I mean, with my experience with my daughter now, and I haven't spoken to my daughter in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's damn hard.
That is.
You know,
awful.
It was different. Yes. I know, like, we split okay. before, and not that we haven't talked. I mean, I remember
yes.
when she lived in another continent. For example, we would all talk by phone, but this
yeah.
is not the same thing.
No.
We don't talk at all now, right?
Yeah. And that's so heavy. It's
it
heavy
is.
On your heart, and
yes.
it's a constant. I'm sorry for that, and I feel that as well. That if only you could, you know, reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And be there. And sometimes, it leaves you with a hole that, because it's a hole.
It's a hole.
There's no going around.
Yeah.
There's no nice wrapping on it.
No, no sugarcoating, nothing.
No sugarcoating. The thing is that it has led me to a greater and a broader perspective
mm.
on what my own behavior has been.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of soul searching, as I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
It's led me to look at and be kinder to other people
mm.
and be less judgmental.
Mm.
So there has been that kind of healing, that kind of wholeness mm. as well.
Yeah, it's so hard. I you know, we talk about this, you know, like I know when we do groups and I hear the same story, you know, well, not the same story, but
mm-hmm.
I hear similar stories, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really heartbreaking. And I mean, and you know what? And a lot of the experience that we've been through,
mm-hmm.
I mean, even as a parent, I've even wanted to isolate.
Yeah.
But when you're having a child, it's a totally different story.
Right.
I still wanted to isolate from the world when I had my child, but I wanted my child with me when I isolated.
Yes.
So that is one part of you that happened to you that no one can take away from you.
Right. Right.
Now, if I'm making any sense whatsoever at all, because now look at it, our childhoods were taken away.
That's right.
The difference is with our children, we didn't do that.
No.
So they don't have that same experience. And,
no.
And I can really see where it would be heartbreaking for somebody with a child. I mean, that, hey, what the hell happened? This is not supposed to happen this way.
Yeah.
You know, it's all wrong. We're supposed to be together. We're supposed to be connected.
That's right.
What the hell went on? What happened, right?
Yes.
And that's very, very discouraging. I know what happened with my daughter and what's going on there, but still, nevertheless, it doesn't make it any easier.
It doesn't.
You know, and there's not a moment or day, part of the day that I don't think about it.
That's right.
You know, never mind my own experiences, but that part is very, very heavy on the soul and in the heart, and you just can't brush it off.
No, and it won't be.
No.
You know, it never will be. You know, and hopefully, you know, you've got to, you know, leave that light on
mm-hmm.
the porch.
That's all I can do.
And just hope that in one day she comes back.
That's
and,
all I can do, exactly.
People change all the time and hopefully. One thing, you know, you can, you have those memories,
mm-hmm.
like you said. You have those memories, those always those good little pockets of
mm-hmm.
time where you were part of their life. For that long.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm always grateful for that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, with what we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
You've started a program at the Gatehouse.
Yes, I have.
And it's from the road from estrangement to reconciliation.
Yes.
So you kind of, in a sense, in your conversation, have kind of already kind of said how it came about
mm-hmm.
with your own experiences.
Yes.
But tell us how you processed this to put this together, this program together for the Gatehouse.
Right. Well, basically, I guess I stole a lot of the ideas from Laura Davis's book.
Borrowed. Yeah.
From I Thought We'd Never Speak Again. I went through her book chapter by chapter. She does go through kind of the step-by-step procedure that you might take
mm-hmm.
In getting to that. But what I added to the program, because what I thought was crucial for me, and I could see it helping a lot of people, was communication. So what I added to that, as well as going through the steps that Laura had gone through in her book, because she did actually write, you know, when I started this, I talked to her and I said, you know, I'm going to start this group because I need help.
Mm.
So that's why it was a selfish start there, because I wanted to talk to other people that had gone through similar things than I had,
mm.
as I had. And you know, I know we learn from each other.
Oh, definitely.
So that was a big motive too. I was a little bit, it was on the selfish side as well. But so went through, I asked her about this, and she had actually written a workbook for this. But for some reason, she had decided to take another route and to not follow that. And so she had destroyed it. So I decided to pick up and to try to, I had no knowledge of it at that point. She just said, oh, no, I got rid of it. So I decided to do another workbook. So that's how that happened, is I decided to write a workbook of my own on it. And then I added, as well as the parts through the book, I added a part from Crucial Conversations. It's a book written by four different authors. Excellent book on how to talk about difficult things.
Mm.
How to talk when the stakes are high
mm-hmm.
and there's differing opinions. And a conflict. So that is always great when you're talking about reconciliation, because you want to be able to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to talk about those difficult things, because without that, you can't really get to reconciliation. Well, I can't say that. I mean, some people do get to reconciliation without that. But the ideal would be to talk about difficult things and to get those ironed out so that you can both live with dignity,
mm-hmm.
dignity and respect
mm-hmm.
and boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the foundation to start. You know, if you're going to be reconciling with your family,
mm-hmm.
you want that's kind of a foundation to start your new relationship on. And then the other thing that I put in the program was I read a book. Actually, this was a book that my daughter had recommended to me.
Mm.
And I have read it over at least 15 times.
Mm.
And it's called The Anatomy of Peace.
Mm.
And I just found that that was another crucial part. Because in The Anatomy of Peace, it talks about people that are have been on two sides of the fence and are not connecting, and how to see the world through your eyes when you're not blaming other people. Like, in other words, a lot
passing
of
the buck.
Yeah, passing the buck, and a lot of survivors, I mean, you know, myself included, you know, you look at the world view, and sometimes your world view is, I'm a victim, so you are, you know, somebody that is trying to put me down. And when you put people in those boxes, you can't really reconcile because you've already put them there in that box. You got to break out of that box and see people for people. And we all come with those kind of prejudgments. Oh, you know, well, you got your university paid for, you know, and I had to live in poverty. So you're blessed. I'm not, you know. And really to break that down and look at people are people. And you know, yes, they may be blessed in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
They may be having to deal with a lot of crap in other ways, you know. So just not, you know, putting, seeing the world in such a
narrow view. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps with reconciliation mm-hmm. and estrangement. Because so often when we estrange from our family, we say, okay, you're an asshole.
Yeah. I'm not.
You know. Yeah. And they may be total asshole, you know. But that doesn't help in talking and coming to some sort of reconciliation. If you want to reconcile, you know, you can't come in there with a machine gun and say, you know, this is, you know, that you're horrible, you're awful, and now, you know, and I'm okay, and now I want to you know, be okay with you. You know, that you can't be okay that way. You know, just have to.
It really makes it hard when you have all those directions, right?
Right, and when you start off with accusing and that, it even if the other person wanted to apologize,
mm-hmm.
very difficult for them mm-hmm. to apologize when you're, you know, when you're on a tirade.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody is really, really angry at you, I don't know about you, but I just shut down.
Oh, I do.
I do. And I can't, you know, I can't think, I can't.
Yeah,
know.
I just want to crawl in a hole.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you think about reconciling, I know the two groups that I've done, they, a lot of people come in with that attitude where, you know, well, they're just assholes and I just can't, you know, isn't going to work and all that. Well, you know what, you know, that's, you've got to kind of get a perspective, a broader perspective on that and give people a chance to own up, give people a chance to look at what they've done. And that comes from, you know, getting it down a notch. And I think even, you know, Richard Hoffman said that when he was reconciling with his dad, he went in with the frame of mind of, I want to build a relationship.
Nothing more, nothing less.
Him. Yeah. And I think in his, Laura interviewed him in the book, but I think he said, you know, I knew if I had gone in with a lot of anger and that
it wouldn't have even happened.
He wouldn't have backed down, and nothing would have happened. Mm. So he kind of go in with the idea that you do want to build a relationship, or you do want to have a conversation, and a conversation means, you know, being with the person.
Which kind of brings me to this now. I imagine through the 15 weeks, is that correct?
It's 15 weeks.
Yeah. Now, you talk about anger.
Yes.
So what do you talk about? What areas you talk about in regards to anger? I know that when we do the other groups, mm-hmm. we talk about anger. And we also, excuse me, inform our participants that it's all right to be angry. It's what we do with their anger.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, how do you direct them in this aspect in this group? Is it kind of the same way, or do you talk about more in depth about it?
I don't think we talk more in depth about it, but we definitely do talk about it, because the thing is that you can't reconcile with anyone if you've got, you know, I mean, your anger is not going to go away.
No.
I mean, it's there. It's, you know, it's justified. It you know, it is what it is. And one of the crucial pieces that we do here is I've spent a week on just looking at what your injuries are and how that has affected you and how that's changed your life. You know, it's not just the sexual abuse.
No.
I mean, it's like the sexual abuse maybe led you to drink, maybe got you into a mental facility. Maybe it led you to jail, and then you were sexually abused in jail, or you were sexually abused in a mental facility, or you can't work, you can't do this. So there's injury upon injury upon injury. And the thing is that you have a right to all of those anchors. Like it's not just the sexual abuse.
Mm.
It's a whole barrage of what happens after that.
Mm.
And yes, you are responsible for your own life. You have to take responsibility for that. You have to get out of that yourself. Mm. Nobody is going to get out of that for you or with you, except you, right? You know, I mean, you can't, nobody's going to stop you from drinking except you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you have a right to that anger. So we do spend time on that quite a bit and look at, you know, what, where is that leading you? Like, you know, what is it getting you right now? How is it helping or not helping you right now? Because sometimes anger helps you
to
stand up for yourself. It helps you to set boundaries. So that's a good thing. But when it doesn't help you, when it hurts you, when it stops you from living, then it's destructive. And so we spend a lot of time on that. What is, you know, your destructive and constructive anger, both, and how that can help you either go forward.
Or anger can be so self-destructive.
Just incredibly so, incredibly. I would say that was my main downfall was my rage, my absolute rage at everybody, everything.
Mm.
And it's a defense mechanism, right? I didn't want to open my heart to love. I didn't want to get it broken again. I didn't want to feel vulnerable. And so it does lead you down a destructive path. And again, like I said, it's up to you to change that, right?
You know, I can really relate to that rage, because I know before I got married and had my child, I was full of rage. And even after my child, I still had a lot of rage. But you know how I dealt with my rage? I studied martial arts.
Uh-huh.
And that was how I was able to get my rage, because I didn't understand why I was so angry.
Yeah.
So that helped me with my anger, but it didn't help me with all the other things.
Right.
So now I don't really display rage. I I may get a little pissed off from time to time, but I just don't. It's just what I was taught. It's just,
yes.
it's not the Buddha way to do things, right?
Yeah, and it becomes a way of life, doesn't
yes.
it? You know, it just becomes a way of life and a way
yeah.
of expressing yourself,
yeah.
a way of dealing with the world.
Mm.
And it's a very conscious effort to stop that and to find another way.
Mm.
Find another way to communicate. Find another way to be in the world.
Yeah. You know, when I hear you talk about rage, it makes me think back. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I was so full of rage myself, too. Like, from a very young age, I didn't have any idea why I was so angry and just full of anger and rage. It was nasty.
And venom and
It was awful.
Yeah.
So it's really
and the thing is that, you know, you don't realize how many people you hurt with that rage.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you see yourself as justified and in that box as being justified of that, which you are, I mean, it's justifiable rage. Let's put it that way. But at the same time, it's hurting a lot of people, which you don't even see.
No, not
you don't
time.
Even see them.
No.
You know, you have no empathy because it you're taken up with the anger, right? With the rage. So with the road to from estrangement to reconciliation, we're looking at all of this straight on, and we're not. A lot of people think, well, okay, you're sweeping it under the carpet and then, you know, getting back with people that really hurt you. And isn't that, are you really dealing with, you know, what happened? Are you really accepting what happened and that? And yeah, before you start reconciling, you really do need to accept what happened and deal with the rage. And also, you know, be honest with yourself and how you feel. And that's the first kind of step, I think, to moving forward out of that. There's a number of different aspects of doing reconciliation, and a lot of it has to do with being, I guess, human, being taking those first steps, and then being persistent, because although we would like people to just, you know, oh, we talk and we blow up and then we say how we feel and then we get all close and cuddly and everything else, it doesn't usually happen that way. You know, you may say how you feel and, you know, maybe somebody's not willing to accept it yet, so you may be at different places, but on the road from estrangement to reconciliation, it takes different phases and different times of talking and that. So, you know, some people think, well, it's one conversation that's going to stop things. But it's really a persistence.
Over a period of time, right?
Over time.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. And just knowing that, you know, people are people. They need, you know, different things at different times, and to be aware of how you want the relationship to go and what someone needs at a certain time.
So there must be some of the experiences of some of the participants you've talked to. Is there a lot of guilt and shame along with this as well?
A tremendous amount of guilt. Tremendous. You know, no matter what happened to you and what happened with the abuse, there is a lot of guilt of, you know, well, maybe I should have, stayed, you know, in the family dynamic a lot, you know, more than what I did. There's a lot of guilt of, you know, well, I can't, go back because, you know, maybe you've done some things, maybe you've had a drinking problem or whatever, you've stole, you've whatever. And so there may be guilt around that, or simply guilt around your own abuse, you know, which is always, you know, unjustified, but it hangs, it's there sometimes, especially people dealing with their own sexual abuse. Well, maybe people that are even have been in, you know, dealing with their abuse quite often go back to, well, you know, maybe I did this, you know, maybe I did, you know, something that I shouldn't have done. A lot of times with abuse, you maybe have done something that's abusive yourself.
Yeah.
You know, in the family. And you can only do what you've been taught, what and especially with multi-generational abuse, that can happen too. So I mean, it can be like a brother sister sexual abuse that, you know, has happened or whatever. So you might feel a lot of guilt towards that, and a lot of, and so maybe there's some, you know, balancing that you have to do on both sides. But another big thing about estrangement and reconciliation is it seems to be that when you estrange from family, that it makes it, I was going to say easier, but I guess the word isn't easier, but it it creates a rift with community. Because a lot
Very good
of
point,
community
huh?
is family. With families, right? And I found that very much when I was a single parent and I didn't have any family. You know, there's you know, my daughter in kindergarten, it was bring dad to kindergarten day, you know, while she didn't have a dad. You know, or there's a picnic and it's full of families and a picnic, say a Sunday school picnic or whatever. You know, people talk about family all the time. You know, they talk about Christmas with grandma and grandpa, and they talk about this. And if you don't have that to talk about, you know, you can feel that you
don't belong.
You don't belong, and that, you know, somebody may say, you know, something, well, you know, don't you think you should just, you know, forgive, or don't you think you should just be with them or whatever. You know, like as though there's something wrong with you. So there is that break, very close parallel, the break with family and break with community.
Yeah, because you isolate from both pretty much, right? Because you don't want to be embarrassed by the other, and you don't want to drag yourself to the mud.
Yeah.
And your child too, if that's the case.
That's right. Yeah. And it leads to the secrecy, you know, like, okay, so, you know, we go to a family function, you know, we go to a community function, sorry, where there's family there, you know, and then, you know, somebody asks your child, okay, well, where's mommy or where's daddy or where's your grandma or whatever? And your child, you know, learns that secret. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, we can't talk about that because they're not there. Or it's too much to get into. People don't want to hear it, you know. So that's real isolation. We really have to get into acceptance. You know, people in the community really have to accept that, hey, there's a lot of different families out there. And it's okay for a child to say, you know, well, we don't see my grandma, you know, because my grandma has a drinking problem, or we don't see this for because of this. That gives the child a voice, you know. Otherwise, they don't have a voice, and it can replicate a lot of the abuse family dynamic. That's what you don't want to do. So it's not always the person, the victim, or not the victim, the survivor that needs to reckon. You need to reckon. They both community needs to reconcile with you too, and you need to reconcile there, because it's very important. It's very, very important. It's not a little thing. It's life. It's being in the world. It's being inclusive. And that's huge. Right? That's very huge. So we do talk about a lot of things in estrangement and reconciliation.
Now on a more positive note.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously, I mean, everybody obviously has their own experiences, but, and there's some where it will be absolutely no way I'm not going to try to do anything.
Yeah.
But when you talk about when you want to, I want to make an attempt. So what are some of the things I can do to make an attempt to try to, to make a connection, for example? Do I need to change something with myself? Do I write a letter? I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. I understand that,
yep.
But what do you talk about when you are talking?
First steps.
Yeah, what are your first steps you could do to maybe, either to find out whether this is either going to happen or it's not going to happen?
Right.
And keeping an open mind at the same time, obviously, right? Because it could not happen. They could turn their back and say, forget it.
That's right. And that's one of the first things we talk about, or one of the first steps too, is looking at what you have to lose and are you willing to go there? You know, because somebody may just say, no, I don't want to do this.
You could lose even before you started.
But one of the first steps to trying to make that healthy connection, a lot of times it happens maybe if you are still going to family functions, then it could happen there, because then you do see people that you don't normally see.
Mm.
And it might just be a simple hello.
Just to get started.
Just a hello.
Yeah.
Because if you haven't said hello for 10 years or you haven't said a lot or whatever, then hello is it's a big thing.
You know, because I often thought, obviously I'm estranged from the rest of my family as well. I haven't spoken to my father in probably 25, maybe. I don't even know if he's alive, to be honest with you. But if that opportunity ever came about, how would I even, where do I start?
Approach.
And my daughter being most important, obviously. Where would I start?
And first steps there. You really have to go with your gut.
Mm.
You know the relationship you had before, and you know what's gone on. So a lot of times your gut will tell you, okay, for this man, a phone call is going to maybe not be appropriate because it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too... in your face kind of thing, and too much.
There's no choice. You have to ask.
So, with that, something like that, then, email and text, I used to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what? It was the easiest way to connect, because you get to think about what you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say just a little bit or whatever. Sometimes it's just writing a card. You haven't talked or haven't seen anybody for a long, long time, and all of a sudden you send a card. It could be birthday card, it could be whatever, and just, lately I've been thinking about this.
Mm.
I don't know if I'm open. I don't know what, but I've just been thinking about this, and that's it. I've been thinking about it.
Mm.
Starts. And then, they may just say, oh, I'm so, so happy you did that. I've been wanting to do this. I've been wanting to start, and I didn't know where, So it's just a little, maybe two words, three words, a sentence. Sometimes it happens like verbal diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
People get on the phone and just say, I'm so, so sorry. I realized that, I've done this, and I know I don't, deserve forgiveness. I can't believe that, this happened. And, I just, if you're ever willing to talk to me, I really want to talk. So sometimes it's just out there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a very gradual, you know, because you know the person,
mm-hmm.
right? You know who you're going to, you know who you're talking to. You don't always know people, and people do change,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you can kind of gauge what you think they might respond to.
Mm. Again, it's about being vulnerable and then taking a chance on it at the same time.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah.
And
a lot of back and forth, you know, because maybe the person, you know, maybe you say, you know, just, you know, with your dad, you know, like, I can't ever reconcile this, but, you know, I know you're getting older. I know I'm getting older. I just wanted to, you know,
just reach out.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they may or may not reach out, it either goes somewhere or it doesn't, but it's that attempt, and then you go with what is good for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, what, how you feel, and especially if it's you that has been someone that... has suffered, then, you know, it really is up to you.
Mm.
You know, you are an adult, you're in control. But I must say that it's extremely hard. I didn't see my dad, and I didn't know whether he was alive or dead, but I knew the month he died.
Mm.
It was a lot of times during that month that I thought of getting in touch with him. Because I could feel that he was passing away,
mm.
and I didn't. I purposely didn't. I had done that with my mom. I had been there when she died.
Mm.
In fact, I held her when she died,
mm.
And I had done some reconciliation with her. But with my dad, because he had made the situation so unsafe,
mm.
for me and my daughter, I decided that I would not see him when he died. I got a letter from the government, from a public guardian about 6 months after he died, and said, do you know this man? We're trying to look for relatives. It was hard, one of the hardest things.
Sure.
And this is a man that, you know, treated me badly, that was, he had good sides too. He did have good sides. He actually put money away for my daughter's university.
Mm.
And he paid for her total university, not knowing that he would ever see us again. And he did it through my lawyer.
Mm.
So we didn't have to connect. So he did have, you know, there was
good intentions.
There was good intentions there, but there was also a lot of other stuff. So, but that not making that connection when he was about to die was the hardest thing. I keep thinking it might have been the wrong thing to do.
Oh, you mean, yeah. By not seeing him, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you second mm-hmm. guess yourself.
Yeah, you second guess, yeah.
Yeah. So of all the things, I would say that, you know, reaching out, especially to, you know, elderly parents, and may be helpful for both you and your own opening and recovery. And
your own well-being.
Yeah, and well-being.
Mm. Yeah, I've thought about it, but I can't, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure not going to get into a long conversation about it now, but
yeah.
I thought about it in the past, and I figured, well, we never really had a connection to begin with, so
right.
it that's what makes it hard for me to, well, just to drop everything and to make an extra effort to go and do that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to do it for my daughter before I would do it for my father, with
right.
that sound like I'm trying to pass judgment, but
yeah.
this is what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And my daughter is most important.
Exactly, yeah.
But I don't know if that opportunity would ever come, but I just thought, well, you know, well, who knows, right?
Who knows? And the thing is that, you know, you say you don't have a connection, and yeah, there's, but the thing is that whether you do or whether you don't, it's a primal part of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a primal part of who you are, and it just bears looking at because of that for you, like, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to say it's good or bad or whatever, but I'm just saying that parents are a primal part of children.
Mm.
They are. And you're a primal part of your daughter.
Yeah. It's almost the same thing.
You are.
Yeah. It is the same thing.
Yeah.
It's not almost, it is.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. But I can see where it really, really be hard for some people. And you know what though? And again, I'm not going to get into a long drawn conversation about it now. But I've been alone for so long. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to turn this around on myself here.
Yep.
And I'm trying.
Yep.
I'm not saying poor me, because that's not what I'm saying at all.
No.
No poor me. Bullshit on that one.
Yeah.
I'm just saying is that I've never had that connection.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If I do it now, I have no idea. And if I do it in the future, I have no idea either.
Right.
But and my daughter most important. But I guess the hardest part about what I guess the point I'm trying to make is, and maybe you can appreciate this too, and I'm sure others can do as well, is that I'm just alone, right?
Yeah.
I'm very, very much alone. And I have no family. I have nobody, right? I shouldn't say I have nobody. I'm taking it back. I do have people, but it's not my immediate family as I'm talking about, right?
Right.
And some days I think it would be hard for the average person, because just back to the fact of what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
like when you say when you go to a school or something with your child and, well, there's something going on, there's something community.
Yeah.
Well, they're all in their family, and here you are, you're all by yourself. I'm always by myself.
Right. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, even when I had my daughter, I was still by myself.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I guess when it comes right down to it, I'm very comfortable with that. I don't really have a problem with it. And if anybody ever said anything to me, I would probably tell them where to go. I would probably give them some of my rage that I so politely tucked away all these years.
Yeah.
Because
but there does have to be a community of acceptance and inclusion, because, you know, we're not unique.
No.
You and I, Stuart. Like, you know, there's so many people out there without family. There's so many survivors out there that have a really, you know, even though they may have family, it's not that type of family that it is like, I guess, I don't want to say normal, because there is no normal, but you know, it there really needs to be a lot of change in what you can be comfortable with out there, and how you can talk and be in the world and be inclusive and not have that type of family.
Yeah.
But be okay.
And be okay with it.
And
just
be okay.
Yeah. Well, that's what I look at, is I'm okay with it. Right.
Yeah.
Trust me, I had my many years where I wasn't okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something I had to learn on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to the Gatehouse, that's helped me too in a lot of ways. Once I became more comfortable with myself and who I really was, then all the other stuff sort of fell into place. Okay, well, that's a waste of thought. That's a waste of thought. So just move on, right?
Yeah.
You know, and also try to understand yourself too that, well, you may want to take on the world, but the world, you know, you just can't take it all on. Even though it's your family, it's just not that simple. And,
never that simple.
And
very complex.
Very complex. And back to what you said again as well, you've come to some sort of resolution with yourself.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I've done with myself as well. Well, I've kind of had no choice. I've had to do that.
Yeah.
That, or I'm going to live in rage all my life, and I do not want to be there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really do appreciate a lot of stuff you've said, because I can really, really relate to a lot of that in my own experiences.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of other people out there will say the same thing.
I'm sure, there's a whole community in and of ourselves.
Yeah, community
out there.
Ourselves.
Yeah. It's
funny, you know. I look and even when I go out in public today and I see people and families, and I remember years back where I used to think, oh my God, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
And you know what? Now I don't. Now I don't. I mean, that's just the way it is, because even the perfect families have problems too. So that's what I figured out. It took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It is what it is. And you have to deal with what you have and make that a good life. You know, it's interesting because, you know, with healing and with all of that horribleness and that, there's a kind of, Cheryl Strayed said it, I think, was a complicated joy.
Mm.
Because you know, you have recovered and you have overcome so many obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a complicated joy in that.
The freedom?
Well,
newfound freedom.
Yeah, a newfound freedom.
Yeah.
That it is, that, you know, you have that other people don't have, you know, and it's the joy, I think, too, is that you know you can overcome obstacles. You know how strong you are.
Mm.
You know how resilient you can be.
Mm.
You know, other people don't know that. They, you know, think they'll be crushed at anything happening.
Mm.
And you know you can get through anything.
Mm.
And you know you can help people. You know you can make a difference in somebody's life.
Mm.
You know that what's acceptable, what isn't. You're solid, you know,
mm-hmm.
in yourself. So that's what I think Cheryl Strayed meant when she said a complicated joy, is that you get to that point where you can really appreciate yourself and who you are.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting
yeah.
it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I never really looked at it that way, but I guess that's
yeah.
a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Complicated joy.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to use that terminology.
Yeah, I loved it when I saw that in your book. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what's the future? Any plans for the future now? I mean, you're doing this now, so are you going to expand on this at all anymore?
I am. I'm thinking of rewriting it a little bit. I'm looking at putting in more exercises and maybe role playing in the communication part, because
excellent.
Like you said, that first step
mm-hmm.
and communicating and how to get there and just skills. I mean, you know, I didn't have any way of knowing how to talk about high stake issues.
Mm-hmm.
And emotions and that without either going to anger or silence or violence, they say.
Mm-hmm.
So either, you know, raging about it or being very quiet. So I think that communication, I'm looking at putting a lot more of that in here. We've been very successful with this.
Yeah. I would like to even do it myself, given the opportunity.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
absolutely.
I'd love
to
come into the group.
As a
participant. I know you would be fantastic and, a great benefit to people to, you know, hear what you've gone through and what your ideas on this are. And that's what I find with the power of peer support.
Oh, yes.
This group, I mean, has helped me, you know, just
as well.
Much or way more than
yeah.
I helped them. And, I'm amazed at how creative people are and how, what they've dealt with, what they want to accomplish and what they have accomplished.
So in the beginning, do you ask what their goals are?
Yes, very definitely.
And you have them write them down and stuff like that as well?
We do. There's a pre-interview.
Okay.
So because first of all, you need to take phase one and phase two.
Of course, that's mandatory around the
mandatory,
house.
Mandatory,
yeah.
And just like me coming in and saying, boy, I want to be a facilitator at the K-House
because
I think I know everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people say, no, I think we should start at the beginning.
Mm.
So, yeah, so phase one and phase two is mandatory before you take this. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of confusing things. Like, you know, if you're not sure about boundaries,
mm-hmm.
then when we start talking about boundaries and setting boundaries with people that don't have good boundaries, you have to have the foundation.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's the other thing of a lot of people that get into this want – they think that reconciliation is forgiveness.
Mm,
and so they're really under a little bit of false, expectations. And so we want to find out about people's expectations. So there's a whole pre-interview to going into the group. Just a note on forgiveness. Forgiveness is not necessary when you're reconciling. There's all kinds of different reconciliations. Some of it may come with forgiveness, some may not. But it's not a prerequisite. Some things are unforgivable. Some things, and different people have different views about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm, definitely. You know, and that one for sure.
Yeah. There's a big push, to forgive. And I think you should forgive yourself, but I don't see it as something that needs to happen in order for you to be whole, in order for you to be healthy and happy. But we don't talk about that at first.
No.
That comes in the latter part of the workshop. So it is held off because we're dealing with a lot of things before we get to that.
Mm.
And one of them is just acceptance of what's happened to you.
Could you give a basic outline of all the different topics you'd be going from week to week? Is that all right?
Sure.
Just so people have an idea?
Yeah.
I don't expect you to go through it all, but just to give them a basic idea of what they'd be talking about from week to week?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, in the beginning, we're looking at different possibilities or outcomes.
Mm.
So, what do you want to happen? Do you want to, or what do you think you want to happen? Because that changes,
mm-hmm.
As you go along.
Mm-hmm.
But, with some people, they want to reconcile just so that they can say hi on Mother's Day, or they can say hi on Christmas, whatever. And that's all, maybe they want to reconcile, and they want to have a heart to heart, and they want everything out in the open, and they want to hopefully fully reconcile so that each person respects and honors the other.
Mm.
So we look at all the different possibilities. What's out there? What's out there for me? What do I want? And we look at the pain of estrangement and how that's affected your life. So, what do you want to do with that? Look at the kind of what the roots are in this whole. But the next thing, and very important, is looking at autonomy. Do you have autonomy right now? Because you can't reconcile, or it's not advisable to reconcile without you having autonomy. Part of healing is being able to say, this is me. That's you. We're separate.
Yeah.
And I can take care of myself. So we have to look at that importance of autonomy and can you take care of yourself? When you start reconciling with someone, you're getting into a lot of the old shit. And really, you need to know that you have resources, that you can do self-care, that you can take care of yourself. So that's really important. Then we get into, and along with that is, what is reconciliation? What's capitulation? Because you really need to make that fine line. If you're reconciling and you don't know the difference, and say, the abuser is trying to get you to into capitulation of bring your child over on Sunday and we'll do this and we'll do that, and you don't feel comfortable with that, but you don't feel comfortable saying no, then that's not a good thing. You really need to be able to say no, and you really need to know what the difference is. Are you capitulating in this whole thing?
And that falls back to, sorry to interrupt, but that falls back to having good boundaries before you come into place. So completing those two programs will hopefully give you that.
That's right. Exactly. And then we're looking at the boundaries and what your injuries are. Taking those first steps, what do you want to do? How are you going to overcome your fear of taking the first steps? And then what you need to do in order to take the first steps. then persistence over time. Need to be comfortable with uncertainty. And if you really want to reconcile, it does take time. I mean, you know, sometimes it happens instantaneously, but I've never seen that really myself. So how can you be persistent over time and be committed? Are you committed to it or whatever? And then we talk about communication and that furthers closeness. So what type of communication furthers closeness? What type of communication separates you? So looking at those crucial conversations. And then we look at our shared humanity and finding a bit of compassion. You know, and that can be very difficult, but, and you know, you might, we look at looking at a different perspective, coming at it from a mature point of view.
Mm.
And then we're looking at taking responsibility for estrangement. And again, very hard for someone who is a survivor to maybe take responsibility for estrangement. You know, or to look at maybe their, what has been their, say, fault in maybe a bad relationship. So sometimes, you know, this group is not just for survivors who are looking to reconcile with their abusers. This is people that are maybe have been estranged to siblings, or maybe have been estranged to, you know, friends. Maybe they've had arguments, or they've had a very close relationship, or maybe a marriage or partnership. And they want to reconcile with that person. So maybe that has not always been the other person's fault. Maybe that has been your fault too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really important. So we look at that and what your role is in a strange.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things in this program that are, you know, complex. And this is why I like this program, is because you're talking about those complex issues that either create closeness or not, right? We're looking at, you know, learning to apologize, learning to talk and be accountable. And then we get into forgiveness. So at that point, we look at forgiveness and different types of forgiveness and how we see forgiveness. You know, some people see it as a new age kind of thing, like I'm just going to be spiritually open or whatever. Mm-hmm. And other people look at it as, you know, unless somebody takes responsibility, they're remorseful, they're accountable, then I can forgive them. If that doesn't happen, then that ain't happening.
Mm.
So different types of forgiveness and people's views on forgiveness. So another thing is the group is a lot about discussion, about your views on these issues. Week 10 is the task of letting go. So what happens when you can't reconcile? What happens when it's not possible? So letting go and how you might reconcile with yourself, how you might deal with that. And then weeks 11, 12, and 13 are looking at a little bit of a role play in doing the crucial conversations of talking about different issues.
So what has that experience been like going through that with the groups you've gone through? Is it tough for the participants, or is it surprisingly pretty good?
Yeah, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say that, because I say that and we put it in there. We've only done a couple of groups and we've just barely got there.
Mm.
So that's one part that I want to really
refine.
Mm-hmm. Because I find that we're so used to by this time discussing and that. We don't get to the practical. Like, we do have exercises and we do those and we do but it hasn't been as practical as what I'd like to see it, or what I'm thinking of doing next anyway. But that is in there, and that we cover that of, you know, what crucial conversations we might have and what we're role playing in that, and staying on track and that. And then we look at the benefits of reconciliation. So, you know, how that reconciliation might help us to heal, and how we might heal with community, and how we might rekindle some of our optimism. And come to peace, some kind of peace, whether reconciled or not. But Laura Davis said, and I think that was very insightful. She said, I used to think that the opposite of reconciliation was estrangement. And she said, now I think the opposite of reconciliation, of estrangement, is peace. So it's a little bit different perspective there. But so we look at, you know, what that would look like. So that's the 15 weeks in a nutshell.
Well, I really appreciate you talking about it to the level that you have. I could have came on here and talked about it, but I wouldn't have known what I was talking about. So I really appreciate you coming on here and talking about it to the level that you have. And especially so short after you just come back from your vacation.
Yeah.
So how long have you been back now?
A couple weeks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you've had time to get over the jet lag, is what I'm getting
at.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, definitely. But not the laryngitis.
Well, you did really well tonight. Your voice, I'm sure, will be just fine.
Okay.
If you want to come back later on at some time and point and listen to this, doesn't have to be tonight, but whenever you want to, because this is on the World Wide Web. So I'll be here forever now.
Oh, that's scary.
Oh, that's not too scary.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate talking about this topic.
Oh, it's so important.
It's dear to my heart, and I really appreciate you putting it out there, and I hope a lot of people listening can.
Well, I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people, and I know that we're probably one of the very few anywhere in the world that are doing this sort of thing. Other than paying a therapist and whatever else, right? But at a peer level is what I'm getting at.
Yes.
And I've yet to see anything in social media even describing what we're talking about.
Right.
Other than paying someone, an adjudicator or somebody, or somebody qualified to bring these people together.
Yes.
And you don't hear about that. I mean, you can't use TV as an example.
Yeah.
Like, I won't even get into personalities because I don't even watch TV anymore. But
you don't have time.
I don't have time. And it's all crap anyways. It's all shite anyways to begin with. But nevertheless, this is really, really great and refreshing. And in fact, I'm hoping in the new year that I can take this upon myself to come and do this. But unfortunately, with my time,
it's so busy.
Yeah. It's really, really, really hard. And not that I wouldn't want to take the time, because I will eventually. I hope
I'd love to.
It would help me. I know it'll help me as well.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it'll help me. It's my bottom line, right?
Yeah.
And
it'll help a lot of people.
Yes.
You're
exactly.
Sure.
And you know, I have a lot of experiences what you've talked about in regards to my own, like my daughter and my father and so-called family. So. And I know a lot of other people can relate, but a lot of other aspects I know it could help me. I mean, I've come a long way myself in my own healing, as you've talked about for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think this would just be another important part to my puzzle that I'm putting together. And that's why I love the fact that you came in here and you're taking the time to talk about this, because this is so important. And I know a lot of people can relate to this so very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And they're struggling and they have no one to talk to about this.
Yeah.
And if they do talk about it, no one understands, as yet we would understand only because we've been through it and been with their other experiences. But that's the kind of people I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then I'm not trying to stereotype or anything of the sort, because I'm certainly not trying to do that. But I know a lot of people can relate to this very easily, regardless of your experiences, whether it be ours or somebody else's, right?
Yeah.
So it is important, and I wish there was more of this out there for people at a peer level.
Yes,
and,
I believe so much in peer healing, peer support in healing. I think it's, you know, there's nothing like it to talk to somebody who's been through similar experience. It doesn't have to be the same. It doesn't have to be that. But similar experience, I think there's nothing like it.
Absolutely. Well, tonight I've had Pat from the Gatehouse here tonight, and we've been talking about reconciliation and wrong with me. Estrangement, I should say, is what I'm trying to say. I've lost for words as usual, but we've had a very, very great conversation here tonight. And I can't extend my gratitude enough to you, Pat, for coming in here and talking about this. And in fact, just, I'm going to extend an invitation to you to come back maybe in the new year to talk about this again.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what sort of response I get from our show tonight.
Sure.
And I'm sure that that's why I'm insisting that that I want you to come back.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because
I'd love to come back and I'd love to talk about it.
And we could talk about this again. And because I know some people were saying, I was looking through my social media. I know that Nikki was listening, or Nicola was listening.
Oh.
And I know there's a few others that were listening as well. So I saw from on there. They didn't pose any questions, but they acknowledged that they were listening.
Oh, okay.
So
Great.
That's fantastic. Folks who were listening, thank you with great gratitude. Thank you for the comment, Living with Abuse. I appreciate that. And anybody else who was listening, thank you. Again, I must mention that we're not here to tell you what to do or what you should do. We're not doctors or anything of the sort. We're just offering our own experiences, what we go through here at the Gatehouse. And your self-care is very, very, very important to us, and our own self-care as well, obviously. So folks, tonight when you leave, when you stop listening to me tonight, if you feel at all triggered in any way, go for a walk, talk to a friend, do something that makes you feel good for you. Hopefully we didn't say anything too triggering. I didn't really give you a trigger warning when we started tonight, but we didn't really talk about anything that heavy to be any of that triggering. At least I hope not. Anyway, I didn't think we did. But folks, take care of yourself. We're approaching the weekend. Again, double take care of yourself. Self-care. I always talk about self-care. I don't know how to get a whole lot of time, but when I do go on social media and that stuff, I share what I do for self-care. So hopefully you do the same thing. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care. And thank you, Pat.
All right. Thank you, Stuart.
And I'll see you next week. I'll be back next week. We'll have another guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is. I have a really big list here now of people that would like to come on. All right, let me rephrase that, of women that would like to come in, or ladies that would like to come in and talk about their story and to their healing journey. And like I say, I want to do at least 6 shows, same as the men. And your voice needs to be heard just as much as ours needs to be heard as well. And I just want to share the love, and everybody needs to know.
Yeah.
So, folks, have a great weekend. Thank you again, Pat.
Thank you.
And good night from the Gatehouse. And there we go. And we're gone.